Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, it's Monday night, and that means it's time for the Constitution Hour. I want to welcome everyone, and I hope everyone has good sound now. I see my brother Dean is in the room. Dean, nice to see you, sir. And I owe you an apology. I've not been able to make it to your show of late, and I say not been able to. That's really a cop-out or an excuse. I've been preoccupied with my ongoing fascination with firearms, and I do apologize for that. But life kind of gets in the way, and I understand, you know, we all get into different things. Not sure if the intro song was playing well for everyone, but it was The Grand Illusion by Styx. You know, I think the song is very appropriate. One of the lyrics in the song is that just remember it's all a grand illusion. Deep inside, we're all the same. And I think that's factually accurate. We all have different wants, desires, passions, if you will. But essentially, we are all the same. We're all human beings. We're all creations of our Father God. And thankfully, He thought enough of us to give us each a measure of faith. And hopefully, we have done with that faith what we should. I think that's our purpose in life, and some of us find out a little later than others. But I think we all can also recognize that we all fall well short of perfection. And I think that's what makes life interesting. Really don't have much planned to discuss this evening. And Robert, I see you on hold there, and I will pick you up here in just a moment after I get done with my exhaustive blathering. A couple of things that come to my mind right away. Of course, everyone's talking about the great taxation and the narrowly averted monetary ledge. And already we're starting to hear murmurings, but not really in much earnest, on the debt ceiling. With his caliph in chief, one Barack Barry Hussein Sotoro Obama, casting the first stone, saying that he is not willing to negotiate on the debt ceiling, and I think that's fantastic. I don't believe that there should be any negotiations. It's game, set, and match. Checkmate. Time for the government to become responsible, just like the rest of us must do, or at least try to do. Well, Dean, I hope you're okay with that major crash. No one injured, just the computer. It's all good. I saw today an article that a Swiss firm is now offering a gold card, but not the kind of gold card you may be thinking of. Nope, this is actually a gold card. Is a card that is 1 troy ounce of gold, and it is divisible into 50 segments of 1 gram each, meaning it is a 50 gram or 1.6 troy ounce card, with 1 gram of gold being the equivalent of about $34 or 1 ounce of silver. And of course, as we know, that fluctuates up and down. Currently, the exchange rate's about 55 to 1. But I think it's interesting that a banking firm felt the demand was high enough that they should come up with such a thing. And perhaps just another sign of the times, if you will, that, gee whiz, maybe gold really is money after all, Mr. Bernanke. Time will tell, won't it? And I'm going to pick Robert up. Robert, how are you, sir?
How are you, Mr. Ron?
You know, I'm doing well. I can't complain about much of anything.
Wow, it's just, you know, this is how I can sum this whole thing up. I went to one of the famous Jewish delis in Sarasota, right? Get a famous corned beef sandwich.
Uh-oh. Was it kosher?
It was kosher.
Okay. Did you get it with bacon?
No bacon, just man.
That would have floored him right there.
Just spicy mustard, man. But I had limited cash. I had enough cash to buy three sandwiches. And there was this lady standing there. And I saw the tip jar. And I told the girl, I said, I'm giving you my last dollar. There was this lady standing next to me, and she just said blatantly, that's the way it's supposed to be. And I looked at her and I said, excuse me, did I hear correctly that you just told me that is the way it's supposed to be? She goes, yes, I did. So I came back to her and said, I guess that must be your socialistic ideological stand that everybody should be broke.
Now, I would have looked at her and said, what is this, a Jewish thing? You think all Jews should die penniless or something? Is that what you're selling?
God, you know, Ron, when she said that to me, I didn't know how to take it. I didn't know how to respond correctly. It just threw me off so badly.
I think that happens to all of us. You know, people have these ideological fixations on, you know, and many of them are just plain crazy ideas.
I was just flabbergasted when she retorted back to me, that's the way it's supposed to be. You're only not allowed to have any cash in your pocket. My Lord, what is this world coming to? I mean, my God. I was just like floored. So I come back to the car and I told Leonie what happened. She goes, that lady just needs to just mind her damn business and leave people alone.
Well, you know, everyone's got an opinion, and I've never been afraid to share mine with total strangers in public. So, you know, what the heck.
I tell you, but that was a doozer. That had an impact on me. That basically sums up the whole thing. Everybody's just broke. Everybody is supposed to be broke, which we are.
Well,
we are broke.
You know, you bring up a valid point. There's one of my guys today, we were having a conversation. One of the things I mentioned is this insane idea that's being floated around by some of the nut jobs out there that one way that the U.S. government could avert its national debt ceiling would be for Obama to simply mandate the Treasury mint a few trillion-dollar platinum coins. And I just have to slap my forehead and shake my head and say they don't get it.
Well, no, I heard that if they made a trillion-dollar gold, tell me if I'm
platinum.
Wrong.
Platinum coin is what it was.
I thought it was a trillion-dollar gold coin.
No, platinum.
I heard it was platinum. That would supposedly cut the deficit. Am I correct on that matter?
Well, the theory is that they could mint some $1 trillion face value platinum coins, and that would eliminate the debt. They clearly don't understand how our monetary system works, but that's okay.
If they cut the congressman's salary of $20,000 or $30,000 or $50,000 of the House of Representatives, that would pay most of our debt.
Well, the problem is the way that the system is structured. They, you know, Congress can't just simply repay the debt to the bankers with a platinum coin or gold bars or more treasury bonds. They simply, it's not structured that way. And simply mandating, which is what they would be doing, you know, if let's say for the sake of argument that they said that a 1 ounce platinum coin now had a face value of $1 trillion. One of two things is going to happen. The system itself will just absolutely collapse because everyone can see that it is sheer fantasy. Or you end up with the Treasury through the executive branch, setting a new de facto standard of currency for platinum at $1 trillion an ounce. And the following adjustment for gold and silver and palladium and rhodium and everything else would follow.
Well, I pose a question to you. How do we borrow the money in the first place?
Well, it's all semantics, isn't it? Well, it's all semantics. I mean, it truly is. When you look at monetary policy, it's all about what people perceive, what we believe. Plain and simple.
You know, my father always taught me, if you borrow money for somebody, always pay it back.
Well, that's true. And the conversation I was having with one of my employees today, one of my technicians, was that, you know, the government just needs to pay down the debt. Just pay it off. And he was talking about doing like a national lottery. And I kind of laughed. And he said, well, it would work. You know, the states do it all the time. And I said, well, you're not understanding something, that a state is not an economy of scale on the same level as a federal government. And most states, I believe every state, has in their law a balanced budget. They have to balance the books. They cannot go one way or the other. They can't run debts or surpluses. It's not allowed. The other side of that coin is that when we talk about paying off the national debt, we're actually talking about something that is a mathematical impossibility. It's not possible. And I explained to him that in the system, in the monetary system that we have, they never print or create the money to cover the interest. They only create the principal. So if you and I, Robert, were to start our own country, and I was going to be the central bank, and you were my only customer, and the only currency in the whole system is what I loan to you, and you determine that you need $100. So I print $100 and I loan it to you at 10% interest. There is now $110 in circulation in our new economy, and there is an outstanding debt of $110. Where are you going to come up with the $10 to repay the $100? You can't, because there's only $100 in circulation.
Well,
that's grossly oversimplified.
Yeah, I know, but
that's the gist of it. That's the problem. You know, Mike said print more money. Well, while Robert, being the government in our new situation, while he may have the printing press, he does not have the authority to print money on his own. The only time the money is actually printed is when I call up and order it. I call up and I order a $100 bill to be printed. And in actuality, Robert sells me the $100 bill for 7 cents. That's his cost involved in printing it. I then loan that $100 bill to Robert at face value, $100 plus interest, 10%, which would be $10, minus the $7 or 7 cent cost. So we actually have $100 in circulation and $109.94 or 93 cents in interest owed.
You know, the more I think about it, it's just you said it on the show before. They're stealing our money. They're just stealing our money. They're just stealing our money.
Well, what they're stealing from you is your time and your productivity. Now, granted, for a percentage of your time and productivity, you do get compensated, okay? You can still use their funny money to go out and buy cheeseburgers and cars and beer and, you know, whatever else floats your boat.
No, we had if we had EBT cards in New York, we could go to a strip club and have a good time.
Absolutely. But the problem is that they diminish the value or the purchasing power of your productive energies, your time. And much of the diminishing is, it's unseen. It's hidden from view. We don't associate it. You know, I had a customer the other day who said, thank God that Congress got something done. We narrowly averted, you know, this farm bill thing. He said, I don't want to have to pay $7 a gallon for milk. And I said, well, you actually already pay that for a gallon of milk. You just don't recognize that that's what you're doing. Because when you go to the store and you pull a gallon of milk out of the refrigerator case, you know, it's marked as $3.80. And you don't make the connection between the remaining $2.20 being taken out in federal taxes and diverted to subsidize some farmer. Because it's kind of out of sight, out of mind. The two aren't connected in any way that you can see, because you don't see the direct correlation. But that doesn't mean that the direct correlation doesn't exist all the same. Because it certainly does.
But what they're forecasting wrong, they want us. I mean, even though you're spending, like last night, I spent $2.99 on milk, right?
Right.
I understand what you're saying, but they're forecasting. What they're forecasting is, you're going to literally see the even though we're paying
right, even though you're actually literally paying $7, the upfront cost to you, the visible cost, is going to go up to what? $10 a gallon? I don't know.
Well, they're going to say, right now they're forecasting $5 a gallon, so you're literally really paying $10 a gallon, so to speak.
Well, you have to understand, you're paying $7 on $3, right?
Yeah, right.
And it goes up to $5, then you're going to be paying $10, right?
Right.
Roughly.
For a half a gallon of milk.
Well, and we have a term for that, and it's called inflation. When there's so many different understandings or definitions of terms. You know, for most average people, the term inflation means higher prices.
Right.
And that's really not accurate.
What they've already done is monetized the debt. Not only have they monetized the debt, they increased hyperinflation.
Look, they've been monetizing debt since the first central bank.
Right.
I mean, they've been doing that since the 1700s. During the Revolutionary War. That was, and honestly, if you really stop to think about it, okay, we talk about all these varying reasons that we fought a Revolutionary War. The main reason that we have a Constitution today was monetary malfeasance.
Yeah.
And the founders knew, they recognized very quickly in the economy that existed at the time that a strong central government like the British Crown trying to enforce or impose its authoritarian rule was detrimental to the welfare and the happiness of the people in the colonies. Whether it was a 1% tax or a 2% tax or a whole myriad of other issues, really they came to realize quite quickly when they wanted to wage war against their oppressors how monumentally important the monetary system was. And that is why when they hammered out the terms of the Constitution, they put into place in the Constitution the monetary restrictions that are there. They knew the trouble that they ran into when they started printing paper money and when they bastardized money, hypothecated money, whatever other terms you want to use. They saw the difficulties, the troubles that it created. They wanted to avoid that. But then at the very first session, under the very first Treasury Secretary, Mr. Alexander Hamilton, he was able to convince everyone that we needed a central bank because, gosh, we had to be able to show that we were in debt so that we could have creditworthiness. We were already in debt. It seems kind of silly. And, you know, my brother Dean, and I've got another caller here that I'm going to pick up, but I want to answer Dean's question. Dean says, okay, we know most of the problems with this. Now, what do we do about it? Well, what we do about it is we have to educate ourselves and our neighbors and our friends and our family, and we have to understand that the major downfall of this country and every country out there right now, they're all, you know, all the major countries around the world are experiencing this same problem. We've got to get back to an honest system. A system that doesn't reward lying, cheating, obfuscating, hypothecating, and simply manufacturing money out of thin air. We need to get back to a biblical system, an honest weight and an honest measure, and stop trying to steal from everyone and just let it be what it is. Well, you know, Dean says we can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. I disagree. I disagree. It's done through education. It's not going to be done through force. Force is not the way to get your message through. And we've got a couple of callers. 402, who do we have here?
Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
Not too bad. How about yourself? That's kind of what I thought. And we have Miss Linda Sills on the line from California. Miss Linda, how are you?
Fine, sir. How are you doing, Ron?
So I am are you doing calling, fantastic.
Is it the Woodstock, Georgia Militia? Is that your new name?
Well, you know, some people might think so, but...
Wow. Every time I get online, you're buying more stuff. It's great.
Well, you know, just another squirt gun.
Yeah.
For my summer pool party.
Yeah, the paintball deal and the yeah, water noodles, right.
Absolutely.
Exactly. I know, we got to be careful, don't we?
Yeah. What? I don't care anymore. I say that in all seriousness. And I've said it before on the show and many others, you know, all that we have, all our possessions, all our money, it's just that. It's just
right.
Possessions, and it's just money. And if I die penniless, so what?
Yeah, you
I didn't
can't
have anything.
It.
I didn't have anything when I was born either.
Correct. Yeah, it's
not,
pretty crazy.
It's not going anywhere. All that junk is still going to be here when I'm dead and gone.
Right, and you have no use for it where you're going.
You got that right. I mean, it may be melted down and turned into something else. Whatever. It's something
I
enjoy. It's just, you know, it's a hobby, like stamp collecting. A gunpowder.
We heard here in today it was on the radio and it was also on the internet. A friend of mine who's in the SoCal Patriots, and he was very active in fighting against illegal immigration. You know, it's like me fighting against Agenda 21. We're up against huge brick walls and iron-fisted tyranny, but we continue to fight. And we heard, see, every 2 or 3 months here in Del Mar, which is a very wealthy area of San Diego, very close to the coast, and there's obviously way too many libtards with a whole bunch of time on their hands, and now they don't want the crossroads of the West Gun Show to be at the Del Mar fairgrounds anymore. So they're, you know, making noise and squirming around like the little cockroaches that they are. So we're kind of aware of it. So the next time I get into a meeting, we'll address that situation and see what we can do. I was considering, since there was something posted in the Union Tribune, go ahead and just write a letter or a comment or something to the paper as in either an opinion piece or whatever can get through, and encourage my friends here to do the same. It's just, you know, it's the same old stuff. It's like dealing with these weasels like the Westboro Baptist Church and all the NAACP and the ACLU. You know, just have to keep squashing them at every turn. That's all we can do. So they know they want to disarm us. I mean, that's quite apparent. And
well,
then Dean mentioned... Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Hmm. And Dean was mentioning some resolution in Congress to try to repeal the 22nd Amendment. And I said, well, thank God the founders made it difficult to do, and that was, there's a reason for it. So who knows? I mean, this guy's a dictator, so look, we're up against it.
Well, it's interesting to me, and I said this before. You know, a good friend of mine back in 2008, when Obama was first elected, was ready to pull out what little hair he has remaining. And I told him then, I said, look, all is not lost. Look on the bright side, okay? This is, give them enough rope,
yep,
and they will hang themselves. And that's true. And regardless of the fact that we are perhaps outnumbered now, I hear that a lot, but I still don't believe it. I don't believe that good, honest, God-fearing Americans are outnumbered by the mental midgets of society. I just don't believe that's true. I think there might be, we may be outnumbered by those with their heads in the sand or elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't believe that, you know, in the end, people are going to be ready to just, you know, roll over and play servant.
Right. See, what I think happened when you look at the numbers, and we know that slaves vote, and I get that, and the Obama machine was well in place. That's why he said on the hot mic to Medvedev what he said. That's why he didn't do well in the first debate. He didn't care. He knew he was going to get it. He knew that he had it in place, and he knew that the stupid GOP would do, again, what they did in 2008. So he was sailing right through. So happened, I think, was when the people, like you say, who don't have their heads in the sand, gave up on the GOP, especially what they did in Florida, and they changed the rules. And then this is the second time that Ron Paul was ousted, you know, pretty much pushed to the background. The people just didn't come out and vote. They said, screw it. We're not doing it. We're not doing the McCain thing again. You know, that's what I think was going on. And you could correct that the people who are, you know, the God-fearing patriots, the true patriots who understand real freedom, maybe we're not outnumbered. It's just the evidence. You know, it's funny how
perception we're just more polite about
key.
It.
Yeah, the perception is the key, because at this point I don't believe anything coming out of any newspaper anywhere, and most news organizations, because I just don't trust them. I don't trust our institutions, and I haven't since I woke up, and the light bulbs have been going off, and I've read a gazillion books, and I understand what's going on. I totally get that these people, these libtards and these professors from, you know, Georgetown University and talking about, you know, abolishing the Constitution, which is an old, worn-out document, they're like the philosopher kings. They don't believe in God. They don't understand any of the facts that don't change. The only thing that changes is technology, period. We don't. The framers got that, okay? People like John Locke and Jefferson and the rest of them, they were brilliant. I have to say it over and over again because they got it. They knew that if you don't have personal property and personal individual responsibility and liberty, you're toast. They lived under
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And I want to bring our good buddy Mike from Connecticut, and the hot seat left is never right, is on the line with us. Mr. Mike, what's on your mind, sir?
Hey, Ron, Linda, how you doing tonight?
Hey, Mike.
Doing well, brother.
All right. Listen, Dean had asked a question. What can we do about all this? First off, as I've been saying since 2010 when I started on YouTube, we need to collapse the Republican Party. And I assure you, if they don't wake up Monday morning, if the Republican Party does not start adopting the Jeffersonian doctrine, I'm telling you, the Republicans will get clobbered from 2014
yep.
by two factors. One, you're going to see a bigger independent movement. And two, stout Republicans are not going to show up on Election Day like they didn't show up for Romney. And I promise you, you're going to hear the political pundits calling for the collapse of the gassed out party, because it's just what they are. They're done.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
That's apparent.
I think you're right. And, you know, I can't help but wonder if we're not seeing the beginnings of what Lord Rees-Mogg and the other guy were talking about in that book, The Sovereign Individual. What they predicted when they wrote the book back in 96 was just this, a breakup and a breakdown of government. And I think you're going to see a breakdown in parties. And I don't think only the Republican Party is on the chopping block. Because I think there are a lot of disenfranchised Democrats as well.
Well, that may be true. But what I'm saying, Ron, is that as a whole, the Republican Party needs to be collapsed. And quite specifically, the establishment end of it. And it's not going to happen by trying to push grassroots Republicans in the primary, as Mark Levin is trying to say. Because we got a glimpse of what the Republican National Convention is pushing through. They are stopping grassroots Republicans at any cost from gaining ground. And they'll do anything to keep their power. So trying to fix this thing from within, it's just not going to happen. Because how many Teddy Cruzes are you going to find? You're not going to find that many. These people create power. And the only way to wake them up is to take their power away. And there's only one way to do it. And that's to bring that, because you're not going to bring down the Democratic Party. Their base is so entrenched, you can forget about it. So the only way to do this is to bring down the Republicans. Then maybe they'll ask, gee, why are they not voting for us? Because certainly, Ron, here's the thing. We can bitch and moan all we want. Mark Levin can bitch and moan, Sean Hannity and all of them. But you know what? If the same conservative diatribe, why would they change? Why should they change?
Sure. No, I agree.
I wouldn't change.
You know, I've been touting that the whole left-right divide is BS in the first place. And when I say give them enough rope and they'll hang themselves, I mean both sides of the aisle. And I hope in all earnest honesty, I hope that all of those so-called quote-unquote conservatives that ran out and voted for Mitt Romney, I hope to God they're feeling buyer's remorse right now. Because I think there was one man that could have beaten Obama and the Democrat machine if only the American people had truly wanted true constitutionally conservative ideas.
Right.
And that's Ron Paul.
Well, right. And the problem, Ron, is that the American people are so weak. I mean, they were calling for, where's our constitutional guy? Who's going to fight for liberties? Well, you had a guy, but you see what 90% of the nation does is that they did watch the lamestream media, which is bought and paid for, and when you repeat a lie over and over again, it becomes the truth. Oh, Ron Paul's a kook. Oh, Ron Paul has bad foreign policy. Oh, Ron Paul's not going to protect the RC trade. It couldn't be farther from the truth. but people are drones. 9 out of 10 are drones. And if you feed them enough bullshit, they'll believe it.
Well, I think you're right. And I believe we'll give it a... We have another caller on the line. I believe that's Mr. Michael Magic from the frozen tundra up north in the peninsula. How are you, Mr. Michael?
Well, I'm doing great, Ron. Thank you so much, and welcome to everybody. It is the frozen tundra, but we are going to have a week in the 30s, so that is considered a heat wave up here.
Absolutely.
Since I am still cooking, I would just like to give, a thought for everybody out there to think about. Okay, if you took everyone in the United States that owned a gun, okay, and let's say they didn't own a gun, but instead they were spirit-filled, born-again Christians, what would you rather have? All those people with guns or all those people who are spirit-filled Christians?
Both.
I would rather have all the spirit-filled Christians well-armed with guns.
Yep. That was not a third choice, Ron.
Well, I think it should be.
That's the biggest problem. That's the biggest problem.
I think it should be. Well, here's the thing, and you know, we've had this discussion. There's been a lot of that discussion on one of the forums I'm on, and you know, it's a which came first, the chicken or the egg? And I believe you that the moral decay of our society is a result of us, as I've said many times, rationalizing or justifying what we know in our hearts is wrong. Now, we can go down a whole litany of different activities and actions that have become socially, quote, acceptable over the years, and starting way back in the 40s and moving ahead into the 50s. And I don't think that the homosexual marriage, I don't think that is a the cause of our societal decay. I think it's a symptom. It's indicative. It shows how far we have fallen. But let's not get too far away from a scriptural context and believe that we have, in this day and age, a corner on the market on immorality. Because certainly with stories like Sodom and Gomorrah, we don't hold a candle to them. And in all honesty, we certainly don't yet hold a candle to Babylon, which I believe wholeheartedly is the goal, is a rebuilding of a literal Babylon. You know, reuniting the world with a common language, and pretty much anything goes, and all the standards of morality and right and wrong are simply subjective.
Ron, in my mind, that Babylon has already been rebuilt, okay? It stands where current Iraq is right now. And Iraq has the world's largest, most expensive, most elaborate, with their own military force, embassy in the world.
Sure. No, I realize that. But when I say Babylon, the goal, and I don't believe it's been achieved yet, and I'm going to say it right here, I don't believe it ever will be achieved. Okay? When I say rebuilding Babylon, they want to reunite everyone under one government, one leader, one language, one faith. So we're not
they will only get so far in doing that, okay? And you'll know when that is, obviously, when the Antichrist returns and everybody puts their faith in him, that the Antichrist is going to secure world peace, okay? But it is a false world peace, because there can never be a world peace through a one world order without having Christ involved in it.
Look, we can agree on that. you know, I don't have any problem with that. I see we've got a poster in the chat talking about morals and, you know, that someone who's not a Christian can be moral. Well, I don't have any problem with that statement at all. My problem is that you have to recognize where the basis or standard for morality comes from. If you do not believe in God, if you do not believe in a higher authority, if you do not believe in a creator God, then the only moral standard that you can possibly apply is one that comes from the mind of men. Your own personal moral standard.
So cute.
And your own personal moral standard is completely subjective. And therefore, it is not moral at all.
It's as fake as money is, Ron.
Precisely. Precisely. Either there is an absolute moral standard, or there's everything else. I'm sorry. This is something that's not negotiable. You can't have it both ways.
Right.
If there's an absolute moral standard, then mankind cannot create that absolute moral standard. And what we see in our society today is absolute proof of that.
And the only city that runs a close second to Sodom and Gomorrah is San Francisco.
Well, I don't know. I think there's you know, probably cities all across this country that run the gambit. And,
yeah.
You know, we just, as a society, we have been beaten down.
Yes.
And told that it's impolite, it's hateful, it's racist, it's intolerant, it's all these things when we speak out, when we see behavior from
mm-hmm.
adults and children that is morally reprehensible. And you want to know how we win? We stop accepting this junk.
Yep.
We stop complying.
Agreed.
We show our disgust in public when people do things that are disgusting.
You're right, Ron. We've got to go back to the old ways.
We stop accepting what's unacceptable.
Exactly.
Period. And, you know, again, what someone does in the privacy of their own home is none of my damn business. But when you want to go out into public and two men hanging on each other, kissing on each other in front of my children, I'm going to say something to you.
Yeah, I got a problem with that, too. Keep that crap in your house.
Right. Right.
And for a government to sanction same-sex marriages and same-sex parenting, it just goes against the grain, and this is why we're sinking into the abyss. And the farther we stray from the Bible, the more calamities we're going to have. It's just the natural order of things.
Well, I think you're absolutely right, but here's the bigger underlying problem for me when it comes to the marriage situation. You know, if two guys want to get married, if two guys and a billy goat want to get married, I really personally don't give a doggone, okay? But the fundamental problem is we have allowed the state to
mm-hmm.
cross into the boundary of the church, where the state is the one that's licensing marriage, and
right.
that the act of becoming married is no longer about a holy union between a man and a woman. The act of marriage is about tax benefits and government benefits programs.
Oh, Ron.
Well, yeah, and go ahead, Robert.
You know what I heard, though? I heard in the state of Kansas, right, this guy donates his sperm to two lesbians. Did you hear about that?
You see, that's my problem, too.
And they have eight kids or something? Five kids, maybe it was.
It's disgusting.
But you know, they had the baby of a sperm, right? and the state is going after the guy that gave the sperm to pay them the
child support.
People that are married child support $200 a month.
Well, and that's because they're no longer married. And
she's
you
right.
know, we haven't even begun to address as a society the impact of raising children in a dysfunctional environment where both parents are the same sex. You
right.
know, I'm not trying to make character judgments on the individual parents, the two women. They may be the most loving, nurturing, wonderful parents on the face of the planet. They are still placing those children in an unnatural environment.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
And I think we need to adopt the slogan that we are politically incorrect and proud of it.
Yeah, I mean...
Amen
to
that.
Yeah, to hell with political correctness. I'm done with being polite.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not going to let people off the hook when they say stupid crap. I'm going to call them on it.
Good.
And when they act
Absolutely.
Like idiots, I'm going to call them on that, too.
There you go. We've got to take a stand.
Look, the reason we're in the position we're in is acceptance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the bend over rule. Yeah. I know.
There's a joke about that. Can I tell it on the air? It's pretty clean.
Well, hold on a minute, because I want to address something. There's a conversation going on in the chat room, and Real Story said, if someone is inherently evil, no lawgiver can make any difference. Well, here is the difference, Real Story. If we were only talking about a lawgiver, such as we see in our society with mortal men, you would be absolutely right. And if you've read the Holy Bible, you understand the entire story of the Bible is laying out precisely your argument. No law and no lawgiver is going to make a difference. It doesn't matter what the law says, because man is inherently evil. Were it not for the intervention of God, the Creator, and Him giving to each of us a measure of faith, and then acting on that measure of faith that's granted to each human being, sacrificing His only begotten Son in the remission and payment for all sins by all men, whether or women, whether they're homosexual deviants or not. You see, because it's not us. We can't change it. If it weren't for God, we wouldn't have a snowball's chance of drawing near to Him.
Right. See,
okay,
it's not
so
about
there
us,
is
about
no there's
him.
No lawgiver. That's the lawgiver portion of God. When we're looking at the Holy Scripture, reading the Bible, the law-giving portion, I don't even call it law-giving. It's actually God's commands. In the beginning, there was one command, don't, and we did. We can't follow one law, much less 10, much less the millions of laws that are on the books. So you're absolutely right. The law in and of itself and the lawgiver in and of him or herself is not what makes the difference. And thank God, God is not the lawgiver. He's the Redeemer. He's the King.
Amen.
The Chief Designer, the Grand Architect, whatever you want to call him. He is the One.
Ron, I have something here.
Yes, sir.
Look, I know we're born to err. But I just don't believe, you know, I think there's a difference between, you know, like Dean is trying to talk about a two-year-old being bad. I mean, I think there's a difference between being bad, you know, misbehaving, or being evil. I mean, you take, you know, I look at my 12-year-old twins, and I just can't see them as being evil. I mean, you take a pit bull. Depending upon the owner, it's either going to be a savage killer or it's going to be an adorable pet. We're conditioned. Evil is conditioned. I cannot believe that a baby is born to be a mass murderer, born to be a rapist, born to be a thief. I think it's conditioned. We're either conditioned well or we're conditioned poorly.
Well, I think...
That's my take on it.
I think you've got a valid point there, and I'll go back to that, you know, the old Indian story about the grandson coming to the chief and saying, you know, grandfather, you told the story that there is in each of us two wolves, one that's evil and one that's good, and they battle with one another daily. He said, who wins? And the chief looked at him, he said, the one that you feed.
Yep.
I believe that evil, inherent evil, and all those things that you just mentioned, we all have the capability to be all of those things, and much worse.
It's a choice.
Right, but Ron, it's, yeah, I mean, it may be in there, you know, we have the potential, but I think it's taught. I mean, once in a while, you'll have a fluke where you have two model parents, and the kid, you know, you have three kids, and two are really great, and one is just an absolute wreck. But then again, do we really know what happened to that kid to make him or her a wreck? Could there have been factors? No, sure. You know, you take two people, they could be under the same stressful conditions, and they both may react differently. That's
sure.
Fine. But again, what was the precursor to ignite that evil? That's why I just don't believe that we're born evil. No, like Magic just put in the chat that we're born to sin. Okay, great. But does a sin make you evil? I don't believe that. I think there's a huge difference. And sin, by the way, in Greek means falling short of the mark. Well, we all fall short of the mark. Does that mean we're all evil? So Mother Teresa was evil? Gandhi,
all sin is evil. Period.
Well, I don't know about that, Ron. I mean, well, define a sin. Again, by the Greek word sin, it's falling short of the mark.
Right.
So,
well, what is the Hebrew word Satan?
Off the top of my head, I don't know.
Adversary.
Mm.
Okay, great. So,
adversary to who? Falling short of what mark?
God.
Well, God's perfection. Well,
there you go.
Well, fine, but falling short of the mark, Ron, we all do. So are we saying that every person is evil? I don't buy that.
No,
I don't buy it.
But it's the fact.
So was Mother Teresa evil? Was Gandhi evil?
Absolutely.
I don't know. I can't go that route.
It's a tough concept to gather because we look at some people as being really good and others as being really horrible. A perfect example would be Mother Teresa and Adolf Hitler. And I can't for the life of me remember the name of the movie right at the moment, but there was a great movie out. I've got it on DVD. And if I find it, I'll send it to you, Mike, because I think it's worth watching. Anyway, to try and sum up the story in 90 seconds, this woman has a dinner date with Christ. She doesn't believe it's him. He asks her, imagine the worst person that you can think of. And she said, alive or dead. He said, doesn't matter. She names Hitler. So he puts the salt shaker on the table. He says, now the best. And she says, Mother Teresa. So he puts the pepper shaker on the table. Now between the salt and pepper shaker is about 2 inches of distance. He said, now imagine they're traveling on the road to heaven. And he said, that doorknob over there is heaven. And the 2 inches is what separates Mother Teresa and Hitler on the path to God. Just to put it in perspective. I've only got about 60 seconds, guys. I wish we had more time. We got a nice full chat room tonight and a full caller board. I want to thank everybody for calling in and bailing me out because I had no idea what I was going to talk about, and it turned out to be a great show.
Thank you, Ron.
Well, it is as always. And for those of you that know, my show got canceled Saturday night due to internet problems, and I have dumped Comcast and I've gone with Verizon, so I will be back this Saturday night, 9 o'clock Eastern, and it's going to be very explosive.
God bless everyone. Take care. Love
you guys.
Outstanding.
Thanks, everybody, for all the support. Everybody calling in, all my guests in the chat room and listeners. God bless you guys. We'll see you back here tomorrow night for Patriot Families Chat.
You got it, Ron. Take care, Linda, and everybody else in the chat and that called in.
God bless.
Take care. Right. God bless.
Yep. You too.